They say when a baby is born, so is a mother. But while you are there to help your baby grow into the person he or she is meant to be, who is there to help you? Many women feel lost and alone when they become mothers, wondering, who am I now? Sometimes it feels like the transformation from woman to mother is as radical as a caterpillar's transformation into a butterfly. Did you know that inside the chrysalis, the caterpillar literally turns into goop before it rearranges itself into a butterfly? This podcast is about the goop, what soul transformation looks like as you transition from being a woman to a mom. Your baby's growth matters, but yours does too. You're not alone. I'm your host, Brittany Ming. Welcome to the Motherhood Metamorphosis.
Welcome everyone to this episode of the Motherhood Metamorphosis. I'm your host, Brittany Ming, and today we're talking to Dr. Becky Clark. Becky serves as a director of student support at a K-12 Christian school in Middle Tennessee. Additionally, she serves as an assistant professor for Liberty University Online and the chair of the Williamson County Literacy Association, a local chapter of the Literacy Association of Tennessee. During the 2023 Literary Association of Tennessee Awards ceremony, Becky was honored with a Literacy Leadership Award for her promotion of literacy in her community and across her state. So welcome, Becky. I'm so excited to have you here today.
Thank you so much for inviting me.
I love hearing about all of the awards that you've gotten because I followed your journey before you pursued your doctorate. I've seen you go through school. So we are friends on Facebook. But I also wanted to hear about your family and your kids. Can you tell us their names and how old they are?
Yes, absolutely. I have three kiddos. My oldest just turned 16 and is now driving independently, which is a little bit nerve-wracking, but his name is Lincoln. Next, we have Micah, and he's 14-year-old freshman in high school this year, so he's starting his high school journey. And my youngest daughter is Noelle, and she's about to turn 12 next month.
I cannot believe that. When I think of her, I still think of her as being like itty-bitty. So we're going to talk today about your daughter, Noelle. She is 12 now, but she has a pretty unique story. And I just love you to share about when she was little and the challenges that you guys went through with her.
Yeah, thank you so much for asking me to share her story. I love sharing her story. And as a woman of faith, I love sharing how God brought me, particularly as a mom, but our entire family through her journey with childhood leukemia. So I'll give you a brief sort of background on what happened. I know you followed our story, but for those who haven't, Noelle was 3 years old when she began looking pale and had bruises on her skin. And so we took her to the pediatrician and, you know, they looked at her and said, it could be the flu. She has a little bit of a fever. Just keep an eye on it. We went home and later, that fever went away. But a couple of weeks later, her preschool teacher was asking about, are you noticing these bruises? Are you, you know, and we were asking preschool, are you noticing these bruises? And we went on vacation to the beach. And while we were there, she hit her head and it just swelled into just a goose egg on her head. And my husband and I looked at each other and said, when we get home, we're going to have to look into this. Why is she bruising? There's got to be more to it than that. And on the way home, she actually spiked a fever. And I was due to go out of town because my sister was having her first baby. And I was throwing a big baby shower. And I said, okay, when we get back, they said, keep an eye on the fever. And when I get back, we'll take her to the pediatrician. Well, the next day, my husband called me very concerned, and he said, she's lethargic, she's not drinking very much, she looks pale, this fever is not getting better. And I knew it was serious when he loaded up Noelle, then three, and my 5- and 7-year-old into the van and took all three of them to the pediatrician by himself. I thought, oh, wow, okay, he's really concerned. And while they were there, they pricked her finger and it bleeding would not stop. And they ran some tests and said, yes, she does. We do see an infection, but there's more to that. You need to go immediately to the University of Virginia Children's Hospital. The emergency department is expecting you. We've already called. And at this point he said, you know, can we go get a bag? They said, no, go straight there. So we loaded the three kids in the car, and we lived about an hour away from UVA and drove there. And he was on the phone with me, but would tell me nothing. He didn't want me in a panic, but I was 3 hours away. And he said, just get in the car and drive and meet us at the hospital. And I was just unprepared for walking into that emergency department with all of the tubes and all the equipment and the doctors coming in and out, and everyone was just trying to get to the bottom of what it was. And that's when the doctor said, your daughter has acute lymphoblastic leukemia, but it's actually worse than that. She actually has sepsis all throughout her bloodstream, and this infection could lead to death. And we just want to let you know that we're going to put her on IV antibiotics immediately. She's going to be transitioned to the ICU pediatric unit, but you can expect a long hospital stay. And sure enough, we were there for almost a month that first, right after all of that. So initially, it was just a whirlwind, as you can imagine, just the shock, the trauma. I mean, all the th and you see your little 3-year-old daughter on the bed, pale and sick and lethargic. It was quite traumatic for me and for my husband and our boys. They were young enough that it didn't hit them as much. They didn't process the severity of what was happening. But yeah, that was the beginning of our journey through treatment and walking with her through that journey.
So she was in the hospital for a month. Kind of trying to get over this infection.
That's right.
And then did they start chemo pretty
They
soon? Or what is
did.
the treatment for leukemia? Can you walk us through what a standard treatment is for a child with
Yeah.
leukemia?
I'm happy to do that. So basically, they started her on a IV drip chemotherapy, but also oh goodness, it just seemed like so many different doctors were coming and going. They had to test her bone marrow, and they did spinal taps, which they now call lumbar punctures. But so they have all of these routine treatments for someone who's diagnosed with ALL. And so at the same time that they were treating her for the infection and the sepsis, high doses of IV antibiotics, they were also treating her for the immediate start of treating her leukemia and trying to get that going and trying to get her really her white blood cells working again and fighting off the infection, fighting off the leukemia, and getting her to a place where she would be in remission and where she would be in a stable state. And after a month of those treatments, we still went home with IV. They put a port in. She had surgery and had a port because of all the veins and trying to put it in her veins. It just made sense for them to put a port in where they could access her bloodstream, and get everything flowing through her system. So initially it was, I feel like it was every week that, or maybe daily at first, and then weekly. And then as you go on through the treatment, it becomes monthly. After a year, they declared her in remission, but she had to finish her treatment plan, a full another year of monthly treatments before they moved to every 6 months. So then for the next 3 years, I feel like it was like every 6 months you went in and they checked her blood and made sure she was still in remission. And now she still goes back yearly to the Vanderbilt. Now that we live in Middle Tennessee, we moved from the University of Virginia Children's Hospital to the Vanderbilt Children's Hospital here in Nashville. And she still goes to the Vanderbilt University Survivor Clinic yearly. And she will do that until she's 18, where they just check and see how her recovery is going, ensure that she's still in remission. They check her bone density, all of these different tests still once a year, just to make sure that she's continuing to be stable and healthy and thriving. So,
So in that year that she was three, when you were just going through this super intense time medically, how do you feel like your life as a mom changed that year when you look back at it?
oh my goodness, when I look back, so much of it tends to be a blur, right? So I was looking back at my journals in preparation for this talk today so I could get in touch with those really valid, real, raw emotions from that time period. And really, it's life altering when you're told your child has a life-threatening disease. Your world stops. And at that time, I was a mom of a 3, 5, and 7-year-old. I was in the middle of getting my doctorate degree, in the middle of my coursework for that, moving into my dissertation phase of that process. I was working full time as a fourth grade teacher. And so all of these things, you just think you have your life planned out. And I know, I'm moving here, doing this, everything's moving fluidly in this direction. And then suddenly, a stopper is placed in your plans, and the Lord says, no, I've got a different path that you're called to walk. And I look back on that time and I think, oh my goodness, we would not have made it through that season, especially that year when she was three, without so many beautiful relationships and sacrificial friendships and family members who gave of their money and their time and their energies to support our family through that. And as a mom, you want to take care of the needs of all of your kids, right? But that year, my focus was so heavily on Noel that I worried about my boys not getting the attention they needed and deserved. But yet people stepped in, and I was working at a school 45 minutes from our house, and people stepped in to drive them to school. I had a kindergarten and first grader at the time, and they drove my boys to school and home every day. And I look at our air conditioning went out. It was the summertime, and we came home, and someone donated an air conditioning unit to us, and we had air and meals. And my daughter was in preschool at the time, and her friends from class, all these cards flooded in, and we had just a sea of cards and balloons and stuffed animals posted all over her room. And you wonder what she remembers from that, and what she's walked away from with that. But then in class, she's in sixth grade now, and she just wrote a narrative. Oh, it's gonna make me cry. Her English teacher asked them to share about something. Oh, it's just beautiful. But she wrote about her cancer journey and about how that hospital room became her bedroom for a while. But it felt like a bedroom to her. And so that wouldn't have been possible with all of that warmth that came into that room.
That love, like tangible love that was in there, like from the balloons and the animals and things like that. That's so beautiful. I love that. I love that she remembers that. That's what stuck with her.
Yes, those are the memories, not the needle pokes and the pain and we called it the sleepy room that they had to go put her under to do all of those procedures. And she doesn't dwell on that. She dwells about how God made her different. She said that in her passage, and our teacher said, I was just crying reading this, like from the eyes of a 12-year-old girl looking back on her journey. It was a really beautiful thing.
So as you're talking, I'm remembering this quote that I've been reading this book called The Body Keeps Score. Have you heard of that book?
I have not.
It's one that I hear people talk about. It's by Bessel A. van der Kolk, and there is a quote that I actually copied out and I have it like on my computer, and I wanted to read it because it just reminds me of what you're talking about. And it says, being able to feel safe with other people is probably the single most important aspect of mental health. Safe connections are fundamental to meaningful and satisfying lives. Social support is the most powerful protection against becoming overwhelmed by stress and trauma. Social support is not merely being in the presence of others. The critical issue is reciprocity, being truly heard and seen by the people around us, feeling that we are held in someone else's mind and heart. For our physiology to calm down, heal, and grow, we need a visceral feeling of safety. And I'm just hearing like what you're saying is that traumatic experience, you guys were held like physically and in people's minds and hearts through support, like during that time, like people held you up. And I'm hearing like Noelle narrating her own story. She's not remembering being overwhelmed. She's remembering that the hospital room was like her bedroom, you
Yes,
know?
that is
And
beautiful.
I just love that idea because I think that there's pain all around us. You know, like there's stories of pain and people go through hard times and suffering. And so many times we wonder, what can we do? You know, sometimes we even feel overwhelmed watching other people go through hard times. But I think that, I mean, this book is written by a scientist. Like he is studying this type of thing, what the effect on trauma, on the body, on the mind, on people's development and growth. And this man saying being truly heard and seen by people around us is the most powerful protection against becoming overwhelmed by stress and trauma. And so I think your story actually shows that in detail because you're saying these people drove my kids to school. They made sure we had a cool home by giving us this air conditioner. They filled my daughter's room with balloons and animals and and you know, these things, and those things carried you through. Like that was that tangible love. And
Yeah.
people were showing like through their faith and through their hope for you.
Absolutely. That's the very real way that in our lives we saw the hands and feet of Christ through people around us. And it doesn't have to be a lot. The most meaningful things is that random text you got when you thought, I'm at my breaking point. I don't know how I'm going to take another step in front of the, put one foot in front of the other and keep moving. And that's when suddenly you would get a text, or I would hear my phone would ring, or I would literally one day I opened my front door and there was just a little bottle of Coke. They used to put names on the Coke bottles and it said Noel. Just someone thought of my daughter and got her this Coke bottle, just left it on my front porch. It's like those little moments mean so much, absolutely, when you're going through such hard times.
Yes. And I think it's powerful because that tangible love, even though it's small, when we enter into somebody else's life, it helps them realize they can keep going for like even 5 more minutes. Because you
Yeah.
said like when I felt like I was going to fall apart and I got that one text. So I
Yeah.
don't know. I maybe if somebody's listening to this and they think I can't do anything for my friend, or I don't know what to say to my sister, or I don't know what to do, you know, for my dad, or like whatever, whoever is going through a hard time, maybe just like a small thing is worth it. And it helps that person keep going. Just saying, I'm thinking about you, or I love you, or I am sending you a gift card so you can buy dinner tonight. Whatever it you can do, I think those things add up because I think sometimes we give up as humans because we think, well, I can't, there's nothing else I can do. I can't do anything for them, you know?
And let me tell you, my mother-in-law was just an angel on earth to us. She passed away now a couple of years ago, but she made my boys feel seen and loved in a time when I didn't have the capacity or the energy. And there were a couple of instances I remember where she just showed up at my house and cleaned my house and took the boys to the park. And then she let me take them out on mommy sun dates. And we went to the water park. And I remember playing and splashing around while she was home caring for Noel so I could spend time with the boys. And another time, she came and stayed with them. And one time, Noel's fever spiked and they had to readmit her into the hospital. And it was over Christmas. It was over Christmas. It was on Christmas. Her fever spiked. And so the boys were off of school. I think she was a year into her journey, or maybe 6 months into her journey at that point. But my mother-in-law came to the hospital, picked up my boys, took them to her house. They lived in Maryland, and took them ice skating. And like they had the best winter vacation. They did not know that Mom and Noelle were in the hospital, getting treatment and help. And they just had a great vacation. So even just gifts of your time and energy, cleaning someone's toilet can mean a whole lot to them when they don't have the capacity to do that, right?
Yeah.
So.
When you look back at that time and you think, okay, my mother-in-law stepped in, I know you feel grateful. What else do you feel? Do you feel, oh, I wish I could have been there more? Or do you have like this feeling of acceptance that like I was doing my best, even though I know I couldn't give all of myself to each one of my kids?
Yeah, I feel like I had to come to a point of acceptance. I think at the time there was a lot of mommy guilt, a lot of struggling and emotional turmoil of I want to give more to different areas of my life, but this de area demands my focus. And so that's where that love in tangible ways, the community, the friendships, all of that, you lean on it because you can't physically, mentally, and emotionally do everything you want to do in certain
Yeah.
seasons of your life. So you have to come to this point of acceptance and say, God has our family walking through this season and this really hard, difficult season of pain for a purpose. And nothing that we're going through is going to be wasted. I can help minister to someone else in their dark season when they're walking through that valley because I've been there. I've sat in the darkness, and I've seen the light of Christ shine on me in those moments of weakness through others. So now I can be that person. So actually, Noelle and I get to serve as Make-A-Wish ambassadors here in Middle Tennessee for the Make-A-Wish Foundation. I remember the first time I heard the Make-A-Wish Foundation, I thought it was for children who lost their fight to their illness. And so I declined any communication with the foundation at first because I didn't understand that it's just any child whose portions of their childhood have been stolen through having to face really life-threatening illnesses, whatever those life-threatening illnesses may be. And I know that many children have different outcomes than Noelle had, and it breaks my heart. But the fact that there's an organization to then bring joy into a child's life and give them back some of those pieces that they missed because of all of their hospital appointments. Later when she was in remission and they revisited the idea of her going, you know, her making her wish come true. She wanted to meet Princess Belle at Disney World, and they just really made her wish come true. She had a moment alone with Belle. They walked around Belle's library in the castle. It was this beautiful thing, and seeing her being so joyful after such a hard season made me think, oh my goodness, I want to pour into that organization that can bring that joy to those children. So Noelle and I get to volunteer here, and we get to help raise funds so that other children can have their wishes come true. So giving
back. Oh, I love that so much. That's so good. And especially for her too, because she can maybe have a unique way to talk to other kids who maybe are still in that really hard phase, you know?
Yeah.
Going to the hospital a lot, and just her presence of being there can be something that can encourage them.
Absolutely. And also the cause and effect relationship, when you think of that and what she went through and sort of the after effects of that. She has something called cognitive late effect, which slows down your cognition, your cognitive processes. And we didn't discover that until she was in fourth grade. Mm-hmm. And we found out this is the result of all the chemotherapy that went through her body. And so some of these things can last a lifetime and impact the way that you process things. But instead of feeling defeated, she's like, well, you know, God made me this way. I just need to take longer, you know, on doing things and processing things. And so in sharing her story, I listen as she shares parts of her stories now and again with her other people and with her friends. And she's always saying, well, you know, this is my story and God made me this way for a reason, you know? So it's really neat to hear that from a child's perspective.
How she's thinking and processing her own abilities and her own challenges in her life.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah.
So I want to move into, so she's 12 now and she's still going once a year, but I want to talk about you and the things that you are learning as you are past that really, really intense part of her story. And now you're mothering in a different space. What struggles and strengths do you think that have come into your life as a result of having a child with leukemia?
Yeah, I think empathy is one of the big takeaways that that maybe I was just unaware of the intense pain that families can go through, even as you hear different people's stories and journeys, and everyone's journey looks so different. But by walking through that as a mom, and helping my family walk through that, I think now when I hear these stories, I just have such a sense of empathy, and I can understand and reach out and support moms in a way that I was unable to before that journey. So I think that was one of the big takeaways. I think for me, slowing down and enjoying every moment, right? This is life, and we're just never promised the next moment. And so not taking any moment for granted. So I take the trips and I make the memories and we do all the things and show my kids and again, tangible ways, how I love them and how they're important to me and how everything we do matters. Mm-hmm.
When you have Noelle's like yearly appointments come up, is that a source of stress for you? Like, do you feel like you have latent anxiety, like medical anxiety?
I do. It brings back some memories. So, yes. And I wish I could just have that full sense of peace. And but you always have, I think, just that, okay, what if? And a couple of years ago, her neutrophil counts were heading in a concerning direction. And so we prayed over her and prayed that they would steady themselves, and they did. And so she's still in remission. She's still doing great. But I think anytime, interesting things start happening with her blood counts and her numbers, and you just start to feel this, oh no, what if, what if we're headed back into that? So yeah, there is that sense of some anxiety associated with that when we go to those yearly checkups. But again, I just try to really put her in the hands of the Lord and know that He has plans for her and for her life, and that every part of this is makes up her own unique story that she's going to have to live out apart from me, apart from her mom, So I've learned my own lessons through this journey, but she's also learning a lot through her own struggles and joys and all of these appointments. So yeah.
Yeah, it's going to be something that it's not just a that happened when I was three. This is going to be a this is part of my story that's going to affect my whole life, as it's affected her, the way she learns, the way she's processing life, the way she interacts with other children, the way she's volunteering, and all these aspects, and the way that you're speaking into her too, because you that trauma was part of your life, but you're working through her like your own stuff, and she's seeing you work through that yourself too. So I think that's so important when moms go through something hard with their kids. I know that I've done this with my own kids, is just acknowledging, this is really hard for me, and I see that you're struggling and I'm also struggling, and we're just doing our best, and this is hard. I've said that to my own kids when we've gone through like deployments, and my husband's been
Yeah.
gone for like 6 months and they're struggling and I'm struggling, and to be saying,
Yeah.
okay, this isn't always going to be like this, but right now it's hard.
It's
And
hard.
then we can look back and think, okay, we came through that hard time and
Yeah.
it's affected us, but we're going to keep moving forward together. So I know that for our family, taking moments to acknowledge that hard part is relationship building, but I think it can be healing too, because you're actually like naming what's hard and
Yeah.
being sad and grieving over it, but realizing it's not gonna last forever.
That's absolutely true. There is and there's an end point, right? So, but when you're in the midst of it feels like, will this ever end,
Right. Is
right?
this gonna be my life forever? Or I'm sure you had fears too, like, what if she dies?
Yeah, absolutely.
And maybe not like pushing that away, like, I can't acknowledge that, I can't acknowledge that. But I'm sure that fear like stayed with you. And maybe that's what comes up again every time you go to those appointments, that same fear that was in your body that like came up, because that's part of your story too.
Yeah. Oh, yes. Absolutely.
So I'm going to ask this last question. And I actually have someone in mind who is, a little boy in Grace's preschool class, and he was diagnosed with leukemia this
Oh.
last year. And they actually just posted a picture of him on our small town's Facebook page, and they said, "This is the first time Alex has gotten to go to McDonald's since he came home from the hospital." And
Oh.
he has smiling, he doesn't have any hair, but he got to have a happy meal. And I don't know if she listens to this podcast, but if you were gonna tell her something of encouragement, what would you tell her today?
I would say make the most of those moments and bring out those smiles. That happy meal is a huge part of his journey. I mean, right now, like that's bringing out the joy, that's bringing out the smile, whatever it is that you can do to take his mind off of the heaviness of those appointments and all the medicines and all the hard things. Yes, take time to do that. And I know it was like an ice cream cone for Noel. I mean, like that can make all the difference, you know? And when you have a young child, a 3-year-old, a preschool age child, things like that that bring them joy and happiness, because what he's going through is not easy. It's hard. And so I love that his world lit up with that ice cream cone. I mean, with that happy meal. Yeah, that's what I would say. Does she have other children as well?
think she does. Yeah, I think she has some older kids. I'm not,
Yeah.
I didn't know her very well. I just know that he was
Okay.
in Grace's class. And he's supposed to, if he's doing well enough, he's supposed to come back to preschool, I think, in February. So I'm
Okay.
really hoping that he'll get to come back to preschool, but he's been out since this past summer.
Yeah, and when he comes back, it'll be one of those things where they'll keep a close eye on his, 'cause they're so prone to infection when their immunities are really depleted with all of the chemotherapy and the treatment. It's really hard for them to go be around people and in preschool and social settings, but they so desperately need that. He wants to play, he wants to have fun with his friends. So I would say let's just pray healing and protection over his little body from all the germs.
Yes. Yeah. Well, Becky, thank you so much for sharing your story. I loved hearing it. I loved hearing your genuine emotion, seeing the tears. I know it's hard to talk about these things and to revisit those things, but I just see so much joy in you and love for Noelle and love for your boys and love for yourself too, because I think that you have done so much. I see so much strength in you, and I just want to acknowledge that you have strength and you have overcome a lot. So I just want to thank you for sharing your strength with us on this podcast.
Thank you, Brittany. I appreciate it.
I'll have one final question to end our time. What is one thing you're doing to enjoy your life this week?
Oh, one thing I'm doing to enjoy my life this week, I would say, well, I just threw a big sleepover winter party for Noelle and her friends last night. So that was a big undertaking. We had hot cocoa and popcorn and pizza, and just I love just spending time with my kids. So that brings me joy when I see them, they're happy and thriving. And she just had the best time and the best
Oh, I love that.
sleepover. And so we had a great weekend. So
That's great. I love that. All right. Well, thank you for coming on. I really appreciate you.
thank you so much, Brittany. I appreciate it.
Hey, friends. Thank you so much for listening to this episode of the Motherhood Metamorphosis. I hoped you enjoyed this conversation and it gave you some good food for thought. If you haven't ever done so, could you hop over to Apple Podcasts on your phone, scroll down, and leave a review? Leaving a review really, really helps boost the podcast visibility in Apple Podcasts, and it encourages me to keep going. It also helps other people find the show, and if you're like me and you are looking for a new podcast, you read reviews and you figure out, hey, is this something that I want to spend my time on? So leaving a review really helps in all those ways. Next, if you'd like to support the podcast financially, I'd encourage you to go to Buy Me a Coffee. You can find the link in the show notes or on the Facebook page, the Motherhood Metamorphosis Podcast. And you can leave a small donation. These help cover the monthly costs and also help cover my time for producing this. There's also some really fun freebies in the shop on Buy Me a Coffee, some art that I've created, and some mental health resources for kids that I would like to share with you. There's also the opportunity to talk with me if you'd like to schedule a virtual coffee and chat. I would love to hear your story, to listen, to hear you, and to give you encouragement in your motherhood journey. Thank you so much for listening today, and I hope you join us next time. My oldest are 16 too, and so we are working on getting the hours right now for driving, and it's kind of scary. I mean, is it scary for you to be like, my kid is in this huge machine that can kill us all, but I'm trying to be encouraging and you're doing a good job.
Yes, they make those handles that you can cling to, and I bite my tongue often. But yes, it's quite scary. A new adventure in motherhood that, I haven't previously experienced, but one that is that all mothers have to go through, and somehow they manage to get through this.
I know. I think during the freak out, afterwards where they're like, why did you freak out? And everybody's freaking out. And then I'm like, you're the first kid I've ever taught to drive. You got to be patient with me, okay?